Welcome. Welcome to session two. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to see everybody here ready to play. This is very, very cool. And we have lots to get through today because this is a, you know, this is one of those things where the webinar isn't so much sequential as it is a weave. So in a weave, the threads come back around from each of the entry points of the of each thread. So session one is also got session four woven into it to some degree. Session two will have session three in it. Session three will have session one in it, because the tapestry of questions and masterful questions is it's both an organic living thing and a pattern that's observable. Okay, so we have a little sound in the background. Sounds like one of the hounds of hell was coming. But that's okay. We can deal. I just ask you, if you have any background sounds going on, please do put your phone on mute or the teleseminar god will have to put us all on mute until it's time to talk. So what I want to do is a few things here. And for those of you who can see, we're in slide number two. Here's what we're up to today. We're going to do a little bit of a review and a brief debrief. It's debrief about last week. It's not going to be de-long. We're going to do some practice right away. We're going to play with a coaching equation, which some of you know already. And for those of you who don't, we'll introduce that. We'll do some playing with the Strat Matrix, which leads us into addition by subtractus. We'll practice again, and then we'll get a couple of tools that are useful for absencing any of the stuff, and I'll talk more about that later, that is in the way of the natural and organic expression of the questions and having them simply presenced and flow through you rather than be something you have to think of and remind yourself to do. So, let's get going. So, here's question one, and I'd like to hear from a couple of people on each of these questions, not necessarily everybody, but a couple of people. What has already shifted about your relationship to questions?
Michael, this is Karen.
This is Margie.
Okay, Karen, and then Margie. Perfect. Okay.
So what's really shifted for me, and I happened to pick up your book, Hungers, that I bought, I think, back in 2003 and, you know, read then and never read it again, and so got reintroduced to it this time. And what came up very, very strongly for me is that what I'm actually getting out of this engagement here with you and everybody else is not so much about masterful questions. You know, I came in thinking, oh, I'm going to learn how to, you know, make, you know, come up with a masterful question. But what I'm really experiencing is identifying and seeing where I'm listening from. And to me, I think it's really about what I'm experiencing is it's about the listening and when I can recognize where I am listening from, that then I'm not present to who the client truly is.
Yes. That's a nice recognition, because not only are you not present, but the where you're listening from will, much like a bucket of white paint, tint what that listening from has in it. And so if the questions that come through you are the white paint and your listening from is tinting it, they won't necessarily get the purity of the question that's really going to be optimal in that moment. It'll be colored.
Yes. So I feel
cool.
Like I'm going through personal transformation versus learning masterful questions, which is beautiful.
Oh, good. Good. Margie.
I think I want to look at the way I've shifted is what I'm finding is I'm now, and I don't think I have this perfected, but now I'm starting to think in terms of when I hear something from a client, I'm starting to think of it from, like, I'm almost energetically taking a few steps up to look at it from a higher point of view, to look at the big picture, rather than, okay, here's, you know, here's this problem.
Right. That's wonderful, because, you know, as I mentioned last time, you know, the client's presenting situation does need to be attended to, but it's a question of where we're attending to it from. If we're simply taking the bait, like the shark eating the chum behind the boat, you know, and they're throwing situation, they're throwing beef, cow, chicken into the water, now all we're doing is handling that.
Yeah.
And we're missing the entire bigger context of the meaning of their life and how this stuff, how what we have to ask can affect both the now scenario, but also the growth in them that's being called for by the very fact that they are present with you. It looks like people come to you for a solution, but that's not why they come to us. They come to us for a change in who they are and how they're approaching things. They may not necessarily be cognizant of that fact, but that's there. Because they already know how to solve problems. They've had to, or they wouldn't still be alive. So raising yourself up those energetic notches allows you to not only see and hear differently, but feel more of, you know, so to speak, what's in the ether about what this is really about. That's great. It also means, in my listening, it also means that something in you has let go of a former identity. Does that make sense in any way?
Yeah. Of course, yeah. I do also have to add to all of this is now I feel like I'm at that baby step stage again. You know, it's like, okay, well, I don't know how to do this, but I now have that awareness that that's what needs to happen.
Yeah.
Perfect place. Let's move to the next question and see who else wants to be engaged here today. If you were to teach this course and could only make one point, what would be the keystone awareness that you could give a new coach learning about questions? Put a little picture of an arch with a keystone in there so that people understand that the keystone, once you pull that out, the entire arch falls. So everything else in the arch is contingent on the keystone.
This is Pam.
Yes.
I'll have a go at this, and it kind of relates to some of the learning that I've got from this already. And it really is that the more that I can, the more that any of us coaches can rely on being very instinctive and our natural curiosity, that's far more powerful than our thinking, logical brain. Because it's occurred to me, the more I try and use the logical part of my brain to ask questions, that's when I really tie myself in a knot. So the keystone could be, if you have a frontal lobotomy, you could ask great questions. But that's just being silly. But it is about, this isn't about a logical thinking, our logical thinking brains. It's about disengaging that, and it's about something far deeper.
Yes, because the logical thinking brain is limited to everything it's encountered already.
Yes.
Whether it's a question you read, whether it's a question that was asked of you, one that you heard, et cetera, it's limited and constrained by that, which means the creation of or the generation of something new that is totally appropriate to the moment doesn't necessarily live there in the logical thinking brain in the repository of already asked questions.
And it's a letting go, not a hanging on.
Yes. Yep. Nice. Anyone else, as this question occurs to you? What would be the keystone awareness? Yes, go ahead.
It's not about us. It's about the client's agenda. The questions,
yes.
I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, for me it was the biggest, I think, awareness that I had when I started. And now I am teaching a little bit of that to the coaching clinic. And every time that I share that the questions are not about them, I always see eyebrows going up.
Yes, because you're actually speaking of, that's a meta observation that has far further ramifications than just the activity of who starts the question or whose question it's about. Because you're talking about, in some ways, where people get their juice and sense of self and identity from. And so if their identity, if the identity of the coach is wrapped up and engaged in the notion of, A, I am the doer in this relationship, mm-hmm. and I have to do it to the client, so to speak, or that I am the source of it, or it's about my brilliance, or my wisdom, or my training, or my experience, or even my sense of my own intuition, that frame will obscure what the moment is calling for. So what you're pointing to here in this observation is also that the coach needs to do the work internally to detach from those constructs, to give themselves space to absent the hungers or the whatever it is that's going on inside. And we'll do a little bit of that work a little bit later in the call, perhaps. Cool. One more question. From studying the questions of others, what's the most important thing that you've noticed about structure? And you see your little atomic structure there, picture there with the protons and the neutrons. And electrons.
Michael, this is Dina.
Yes.
One of the things that I am always reminded of, and your call last week reminded me again, is simple is better.
Mm.
You know, when we make, partly to the person who spoke before, you know, when we think it's about us, we tend to make really, really, quote-unquote, smart questions that are complex and have dangling participles, and we think we're very clever and we're proving our worth. And when I began coaching, I remember I used to ask those, and then you'd be met with total, like, what? So I would say for me, one thing I try to remember is you can ask a very powerful question very simply.
Yes. And I'd like to, if I can, I'd like to share an example of one that hit me that was asked by my coach, Jay Perry, many years ago. And it was a time when I was feeling very despairing. And things, I had like a really bad week. Lots of things were going, and I just felt like everything was turning to crap, and I couldn't stop it. And so I come to the call with that. And he says, how do you need me to be with you right now?
Hmm.
And the simplicity of that question, it wasn't filled with multisyllabic words and all sorts of things. If we take a look at what that question was built for, it was absolutely what was called for in the moment. And given that I felt like my life was out of control and I was helpless to do anything about it, one of the things built into that question was, well, I may not be able to control anything else, but at least I can control how my coach is with me right now. Also in there was an extension of relationship versus activity, because it was, how do you need me to be with you right now? It wasn't, what do you need me to do for you? You see how both of those questions are very, very different. How do you need me to be with you?
What I like about that question, just to follow up, is mm-hmm. that he was reminding you of your own agency and power.
Yes, Exactly. It put me right back in the sense of me feeling like I actually could affect something in the world. That's a perfect way to put it. Right back in my own agency and power. Now, if somebody was despairing and feeling all that sort of stuff, and somebody on this call heard that question, and then they said, oh, yeah, I heard a great question. Let me whip it on them. The problem is that it wasn't born of the moment. So it may be a wonderful question, but if it isn't intuitively born of the moment, if it's born from the intellect's catalog of questions, and now I'm approaching this person in a formulaic scenario, like if client is feeling despair and helpless and out of control, access question number 127. Now, that's not to say that that question itself couldn't be once again spontaneously born in that moment. But it goes back to what was spoken earlier about where one is listening from. If one's listening from the place of attempting to demonstrate their brilliance or, wow, look at this guy, he's got a great question, that very same language will energetically hit the client completely differently. Now, you may get some reaction out of it that's valuable, but it's not optimal because it's not out of the relationship. It's actually out of only one part of the relationship, and that part being the coach. Anyone else on this particular question? Okay. So, if you remember, I also asked you in the mail that went out, what was a question that someone asked you that was not only a game changer, it was a life changer? So who'd like to share a little bit about that, what it was and how it changed your life?
Michael, this is Michael. Libby.
Okay, Libby, and then there was another person there.
Chantal.
Okay, Libby and then Chantal.
Yeah, so the question was, what's stopping you? So it was a really simple question. And what I was talking about was thinking about pursuing a coaching, you know, training program. And I'd had this conversation with a coach for a couple of two or three times. And I'd looked at this program, that program, and, you know, I was kind of, you know, still exploring. And you know, I'm getting more and more excited about this. And it was like, what's stopping you? And I went right home, and I enrolled. And I think back about that, you know, still to this day. It's so, like, it's so vividly clear in my mind still sitting there. And then it was just like, I had that pause, right, that kind of, well, nothing, you know, and I got really excited.
That's great. Thank you. Chantal?
Just to put you in context, I have a scar just above the breast, and I got it. I was 15 years old, and I met a coach. I was 40 years old, and I was hiding it since my 15 years old. And he saw it by accident, and he just said to me, "When are you going to show it?" And it struck really hard on me, and I stayed with the question for, I think, it was an ICF conference. I think I stayed with the question for at least 1 month. And the summer that followed, I decided to show it bit by bit, you know, at different places. And it was definitely a life changer for me, because now I am accepting it, and it doesn't show almost anymore. It's like the process inside of me, it's like it healed the scar in a better way. So before it was really big and red and thick, and now it's almost flat, and it's the
the color of my skin. So it was a life changer question, definitely on different levels. But it was a really simple question.
Yes. Yes, to Dina's point. Now, masterful questions don't necessarily need to be complex. In a lot of cases, they're very simple. And what I like about that is that it also, in its own way, was built intuitively, I'll say, built intuitively to have you complete whatever else needed to be completed inside you in order to be okay to show it. It wasn't just a fact of, you know, like, let me just whip this out and show everybody. It was a month of your internal process that had to complete something inside you.
That's so well said.
Okay. So in many cases, masterful questions are operating not just on the strategic level, definitely not there, and not on the tactical level. It's a full being experience. How about one more?
Well, Michael, this is Margie. I can think of one from, oh my gosh, probably like 2003, 2004, when I first started looking into coaching and was on a free teleclass. And the question was, what would I do if there were no fear of failure? And I said at the time, well, you know, I would, you know, buy a laptop and I would travel the world. And she said, well, for work or play? And I said, both. And that's what really transformed my coaching.
Beautiful. Because it got to be both, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. Very nice. Thank you. So let's keep moving. Let's do a little practice. This is an exercise called Coaching the Moment, Not the History. And I'd like, as I also mentioned in that email, I'd like a couple of people to be volunteers. I'd like someone who wants to experience some movement on some coaching issue for themselves today. Get the benefit of the brilliance of all of the people who are on this call and all of the intuitive wisdom that can come through the collective here. So who's willing to bring a scenario for us? Let me get that part started.
I'll jump forward. This is Margie.
Okay, great, Margie. Okay, just hold your scenario for a second while I put out the rest of the ground rules, okay? Okay, let's see. We have, I want to make sure I do this. We have, how many people? We have one, two, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Perfect. So, the first part is, I'm just going to go around the room and ask you to pick a number from 1 to 10, and whatever number that is, don't anticipate because you have no idea where I'll be starting the count, but pick a number, and if that number has already been called, you know, then you'll have to choose another one. So say your name and a number.
This is Connie, and I'll Connie with a K, and I'll pick 7.
Okay. Connie with a K is 7. Okay.
Hi, Mickey. I'll pick 3.
Okay, Mickey has 3.
This is Karen. I'll pick 2.
2? Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is Pam. I'll pick 5.
Pam has 5.
Yeah. This is Ron. I'll pick 9.
This is, oops.
Okay, Ron has 9, and...
Michael, this is Dina. I'll take 4.
4. Dina has 4.
Michael, this is Connie. I don't understand your question. I'm sorry.
Just pick a number from 1 to 10 that hasn't been already selected. So far, we have 2, two, three, four, five, seven, and nine selected.
I'll pick 10. Is 10 okay?
10 is fine.
Okay.
Okay.
Michael, I'll take 8. This is Libby. Can you hear me?
I can hear
I'll take 8.
Hi, Libby. Take 8. Okay, good. Who's hanging out? Let's see.
See? This is Chantal. I will pick 6.
Okay, 6. So, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Remember your numbers. And so, Molly, are you up for playing in this?
No, I'm just going to observe.
Okay. Okay. So what we have is 2 through 10. And what we're going to do is this is how the game goes. When it's your number, your turn, you get to ask one question of the client. Once the client has presented the scenario, you get to ask one question. For the sake of this exercise, I'm going to ask for no closed-ended questions. I'll ding you. And then you get to try again. Then the next person goes. Now, the next person, your job is to ask your question only from what the client has said, not what you would have asked if you were in an earlier position. So you can't backtrack the whole scenario. You just have to listen, pay attention to what the client says in the context of what has been said, and then ask the question from what they say. Now, is there anyone who is not clear? Okay. And so what we're going to do is that we're going to start at number 5, cycle through 10, and come back around 2, 3, and 4. All right? So number 5, you're going to be the first person. We'll cycle through 10. Now, what I'm also going to do is give you the word for this part of the call, and that is, for the CEUs, the first word is curiosity. Okay? So, Margie, and let's see, I'm going to ask everybody to really pay attention to the background noise you have, because we're getting a lot. It does sound like somebody is making dinner and with an electrostatic razor. So please note.
Maybe people could mute until they want to talk, Michael, because it's a lot of noise.
That would be great. That's a perfect way to handle it, Dina. So mute until it's your turn. And so you know that 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then 2, 3, 4. Okay, so any questions before we begin? The word of this part of the session is curiosity. And Margie, if you would just go ahead and say your scenario, or what it is that you would most like to be use this coaching for today, and we'll start with number 5.
All right, and I am answering the questions. Is that correct?
No, yes, you are. You're answering question they give you.
Okay, all right, gotcha. All right. Okay, so although I have been working very hard on trusting and relaxing, I am leaving Friday to do a presentation on Monday that I know is going to have a huge audience. And because the topic is disruptive success, I have been very disruptive in how I've done this. And usually I've got it down pat by now, and I'm still working on that. So the usual chaos of practicing my talk just so that it's very natural, and also getting ready to leave town for this conference has really sort of I'm in a more stressful place today than usually about 2 days before leaving for a conference. So I just need to, get my perspective in gear.
Hi, Margie. This is Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Thank you for sharing.
My question is, what's really getting in the way of this for you?
Probably really letting go of control, I think.
So this is Chantal, Margie?
Yes.
So what would happen if you will completely let go of what's bothering you right now?
I think what comes up for me when I hear that question is I think I need to have all the pieces in place and also be able to, I absolutely want to hit it out of the ballpark in this presentation and have people walking away talking about it.
Well, this is Connie. Margie, and I understand that this is a pretty important presentation for you, and you really want to make an impact. When you've been able to make an impact before, what do you think was really internally for you the key to being present while you did that?
I feel that the big key was that I had practiced my material so much that then I was just able to relax and, in a sense, enjoy the presentation part of it. And I think I'm worried that I'll get caught up in the details of what I want to say. And yes, I'm trying to remember that, yes, I trust myself and know that it's, you know, the few main things that I want to get across. But that's the biggest thing coming up for me.
Margie, this is Libby, and this. So it sounds really big, and it sounds like it's causing some confusion around your normal process. And I'm wondering what you already know about disruption that could support you to kick this out of the ballpark.
Mm. Cool question.
Margie.
Go ahead.
Margie.
No, I don't think.
No, let Margie hasn't finished yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think that's just a good, cool question to sort of process, and I'm not so sure that I really need to answer it.
Okay.
I guess
fine.
I will. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, what comes out of disruption is fully stepping in to whatever it is without fear. Okay. Yeah, you heard that let go, huh? Cool.
That probably just changed your question, didn't it, for the next person?
Margie, this is Connie with a C. Sounds like a very, very exciting thing you've got planned, so congratulations. I want to ask you something. what specifically would you like people to do? I know you want to create impact, but what do you want them to do when they leave your talk?
I want them to do whatever it is that they dream of doing that perhaps they've held back from doing in the past because of fear. There's a little parallel there.
Hi, Margie. This is Ron. And
hi, Ron.
Thanks again for Thanks again for your sharing. I'm very curious. You know, what you know, if fear wasn't a factor in your space, what might you dream of doing? Coming when it comes to this this event you have on Monday.
I think doing exactly what I'm doing. But without the fear of doing it. So I think probably the biggest concern, sort of the concerns are sort of starting to melt away here a little bit. Because I mean, do exactly what I'm going to do and not be so concerned about the cool little ways I'm going to say something, but what my main message is.
Okay. So, who's next? Everybody else be on mute, please.
Sorry, this is Karen. I was on mute. So, Margie, I'm hearing that you talked about, you've mentioned fear a couple of times, and there seems to be an underlying fear of the result that you might produce in this presentation. So, I'm curious about the whether there is a particular expectation that you have about yourself that is driving this particular fear now.
I think I've put a lot of expectations on myself where I want this to be the best presentation I've ever done. But yet, as you asked that question, I realized, there might be a few people that have seen me present before, but, nobody else has known what I've done before or couldn't remember, maybe.
Could that person please mute?
And let's see, who's next? Karen, you were number three?
No, I was number two.
You were two. Okay, number three, you're on. If you're talking, you're still on mute. Mickey, have we lost you? Okay, well, we'll skip number three and go to four.
Hi, Margie, it's Dina. I am I'm wondering what might be really cool and disruptive about your fear that you could embrace.
The first thing that comes up for me when you ask that is, which just so would not be what I could do, would be to stop practicing it.
Okay. So, Mickey, are you back in? Okay. So let me ask you, Margie, where are you now with respect to what it was that you brought to us all?
I can't, you know, there were some super, super questions that were there. And a couple, I can't even remember specifically what they are, but it was like they dissipated the stress that I was feeling. So I feel a whole lot calmer.
What do you sense has shifted inside you?
Trust. Myself.
Nice. Thanks for bringing that to the table.
Thank you, everybody.
Michael,
can you hear me now? It's Mickey.
Oh, hi, Mickey. Hi. Yes, now
yeah,
I can.
I don't know what happened. I tried, and the technology is. This is a stress for me. I thought I was doing it right. I spoke before, and nobody heard me. Story of my life.
Well, tell you what. Maybe we'll bring that one into the next coaching piece.
Good. Okay.
So
I'm
definitely
not touching anything, the phone or computer or anything.
Okay. Well, we'll take care of all of that, and we'll see that you get a place to play in the next round. How's that?
Thanks, Michael. Sounds good.
Okay. Sorry to hear you're having some technical difficulties.
Okay.
So one of the things that occurred out of that was, and Margie, you articulated it as you trusting yourself, is a lot of our job as coaches is to return the client to a full sense of themselves. And what they're capable of and what their capacity is. One of the things that happens over the course of time is that we get conditioned, we get acculturated to disowning ourselves. So we start to not know what it is that we can count on in ourselves. And the inquiry path that was taken in this particular instance helped return Margie to her sense of herself. So I just want to invite you to have that also as a background context of what sense of self. It's almost like a question that's floating in the air that's going to inform other questions. What sense of self is this client not connected with that this is an issue? And then let that inform a question. And what I also want to do is just ask a couple of you what it was like to have what you were going to be asking shifted by what it was that you heard. So now all of a sudden you had to drop the question you had based on what you heard, because where she went after two people was different than where you thought it was going to go. So now you had to be the present with the new question, or whether or not you felt the pull to try and bring the question you first had to it when you first saw the situation. So I'm just inviting you to share a little bit about your experience of being able to ask only one question and then to have to follow somebody else's.
Can you hear me now, Michael? It's Mickey.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't get to ask a question, but I was working very hard internally not to formulate a question until my turn was coming up and I heard what Margie was saying.
Perfect. Great place to be.
And it was not easy.
Yes, it's not. It's not easy because we're not programmed to allow for space. We think if we're going to be fully of service, we need to be right on top of the client, which means we don't allow for space for what it was that they said to sink in and land. And then we don't allow for our own space to simply open up and go, oh, okay, let me be with this for a minute. Oh, okay, that's what's being called for right now. And ask that. We think coaching is an activity rather than a presencing. So the more we can stay in that space of silence where someone has said something and let it really permeate our being with the essence of what's being said and asked, the more we can be true to what they're really waiting for us to ask them. Anyone else? What else did you notice about that process for yourself?
Well, this is Connie with a K, and what I really noticed was being of having that waiting period and being sort of forced to wait, so to speak, really made me recognize how important it is, the evolution of the client through the session. It's like because she shifted, so you know we had to shift with her and stay with her. And I thought that was a valuable awareness for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And let me ask one more question. What was it like to hear someone else's question in the space of what you would have asked, but it wasn't your turn? What was it like to hear how someone else, where someone else went with it?
Oh, it was torture. This is Karen. Yeah, what happened to me is like, oh my gosh, that was such a great question, and then I lost my presence. So it was really, really interesting to observe myself in this process, and yet I really enjoyed the exercise of training that muscle to stay with what the client was saying and to jump from the last thing that they said. It wasn't easy.
Yeah. Yes. We collapse into habits and patterns about how to be with a client, and then we forget that it's really about being present. Cool. Anyone else before we move on? Okay. So here's the coaching equation, something that I've borrowed from Tim Galway out of the Inner Game of Tennis, and it's probably one of the most powerful equations that is out there with respect to the coaching process. Performance equals potential minus interference. If we go back to the respectful assumptions and the assumption of all of that capacity and capability that is already innate, inherent in the human being we're engaged with, then that is all just potential waiting to be expressed. Some of it's being optimally used, other parts of them are not. So the question is, what's interfering with that? And when we look at it from the point of view of it being interference, all of a sudden the dynamic and the relationship changes. And it changes from, if you can imagine this physically, it changes from if I'm across, sitting across from somebody with no table, and then the client in the situation, it changes from me interacting with them in an across position to the client and I sitting in chairs side by side looking at it. What's the interference? So normally the dynamic of the relationship looks like, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, there's some subtle message where the client is sitting in a place of, what do I need to do differently? Where am I wrong? What's not working about me? It's kind of a background question. What's not working about me? How I think about it, how I am about it, my state of being about it, et cetera, et cetera. When you work with this equation, performance equals potential minus interference, that all shifts to, you're fine. This is just some frickin' interference. Let's go find that together. And then subtract it in the same way that when you clear up your television from the interference on a screen, you see the picture beautifully. The picture was already there. And the only thing that obscured its full expression into your room was the interference. So let me just ask how this coaching equation, you know, though some of you may already be playing with it, how this coaching equation impacts how you approach the coaching interaction.
Well, Michael, I love the visual of like sitting side by side, and I almost get the sense of, you know, taking hands and saying, okay, let's figure it out together.
Yes. Yes.
This is Pam here. It makes the coaching interaction, it becomes far more of a partnership and
mm-hmm.
puts people both on equal footing. There isn't someone lacking, someone trying to solve or put right. It really makes it a true partnership.
Yes. I mean, in my own experience. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, just really quickly. This is Libby. Yeah. I remember we were describing coaching to a group that was about to kind of experience their first coaching session, and my partner sort of demonstrated what coaching is like as opposed to mentoring, and she did exactly that. She's like, she took me and, like, you know, we walked together kind of side by side as opposed mm-hmm. to her walking in front of me, you know, she walking in front of me. And I always remember that it was a great visual for people.
Yes. What it can also do in the relationship is that it can make it all much more playful and light, because now all of a sudden we're on a treasure hunt. We're in a detective quest, you know, rather than we're going to process you. And the
like
more often... Yes, like meat packing, right? Kind of process you like meat packing. Yeah, and the more often you can get to a space of lightness with people, the easier it's actually going to become. Anyone else before we move to the next piece? Okay. And this is the next part for our CEU session is, what is the prime number closest to your age?
What?
So if you're,
what was that?
What is the prime number closest to your age? This is for the being able to get the credits for the CEUs. You're going to be collecting each of these three pieces. And by the way, just to clarify here, save up all of the pieces that I deliver over the course of each session and then send it all to me in an email in order to get your CEUs. Okay? So this is part of keeping track that people are attending. What's the prime number closest to your age? Okay, so here we are, moving on. Coaching is a subtractive process. And let's take a look at this for a minute. This is called the Strat Matrix of Human Development. For a number of different reasons. Number one, it's a fairly strategic approach. It approaches through different strata and, of course, Stratford. And this is what I observed over the course of my career in coaching, is that if you take a look at the bottom box, and this is a typical Johari window kind of setup where there's four boxes. In the bottom right-hand box, when people want to upgrade their life, typically what they'll do is that they'll add tangible things. They'll get a new car, get a new house, they'll get a new computer, they'll get a new iPhone, they'll get the Samsung Galaxy 4 watch as a phone is a computer thing. Now the new one, whatever it is, get a new suit, get new shoes, doesn't matter. They'll tend to add tangibles. Or they'll subtract some tangibles. And over in the subtracting tangibles realm, they'll be like, clean out my garage, clean out the clutter in my office, empty my closets, subtract the husband or wife. You know, they'll subtract the tangible. And these are all in the realm of doing. And, you know, that may appear like that's going to have a great effect, and to some degree it will. The circumstances change and people will feel temporarily or experience a better life. Sometimes they'll even go down to the bottom left corner, which is add intangibles. In the bottom left corner, adding intangibles is like adding new ideas, new beliefs, new concepts, new systems, and all that sort of stuff. Now, the problem with that, not that people won't go out and get some new ideas, some new information, some new skills, some new whatever you want to call it, data. The problem with that is that that data is going over top of existing data. It's going over top of the who of someone. It's going over top of all three of those are going over top. Subtract intangibles, add intangibles are going over top of what's already there. And the place, the last place that people seem to want to work, which is the place where they need to work first, is to subtract intangibles. Now, a lot of you already know to do this in certain ways, but I just want to validate that this is the place where we need to work first, subtracting the intangibles, whether it's a belief, it's an anxiety, it's an identification of self with some former event, it's an incomplete experience of the past, it's a leftover. Something that's hanging around and coloring everything they do. So let's just take for a moment the whole notion of, to help clarify this, subtract tangibles. For a long time, and may still be in vogue in the coaching profession, people talk about cleaning out the clutter in your office, cleaning out the clutter in your closet, cleaning out the clutter in your garage. And that'll transform your life. Well, maybe. The challenge with it is that people will clean it all out, and yet if they haven't addressed what inside them, whether it's a hunger or a core dynamic or some sort of belief, if they haven't addressed that, the only thing that's really going to happen is that their garage is going to be a mess 6 months from now. And then they're going to go on another clean up my tolerations campaign. Or it'll leak out in some other place being cluttered. So by subtracting the intangible of whatever was driving the need to collect all that crap in the first place or not address it in the moment or to be attached to it in the fear of losing one's sense of self if I get rid of all my garbage, once we subtract that, then people can go ahead and subtract tangibles and they'll stay subtracted. Now, where does this help in the add tangibles? Think of it this way. If people have a hunger for feeling important or feeling or getting seen or recognized, et cetera, or in the core dynamics word language, looking for themselves where they're not, which is what is a kind of energy that drives people to go, oh, I need to get this job, this promotion. And if I get that promotion, I'll be okay. And they get that promotion and they're okay for about 5 minutes. Then they have to go out and get something else. And then they get that. And if I get that, oh, if I only get that, then I'll be okay. if I only get this car, if I only get this house, if I only get this whatever, fill in the blank, then I'll be okay. The problem is that when the core dynamic is functioning on the energetic level, it doesn't matter what you try to fill that hole with, it's not going to stick. So now if you subtract that sense of whole, H-O-L-E, so that people have an experience of themselves as whole, W-H-O-L-E, now all of a sudden, they may not get that car. They may not even go after that promotion. And they may find out that that promotion was going to be a nightmare anyway, once they got it. However, if they do get the car, they may be getting it more out of their values than out of their hungers. If it doesn't matter to them whether or not everybody thinks they're important because they're driving a Benz, now all of a sudden, they may well buy the Benz, but they'll be buying it out of something that's more congruent with who they are, like the value for precision and styling and reliability, etc. Instead of, yeah, look at that. Ain't I important? And going now to subtracting intangibles with related to adding intangibles. Ideas are a dime a dozen. We get great ideas all the time. How many things have we seen on TED Talks or seen in posts on Facebook or in LinkedIn? Then we go, yeah, that's great. I believe that. I want to institute that. I want to have that be part of my life. And then nothing happens. Or somebody is trying to put an abundance or a prosperity or the secret belief over an affirmation over top of the fact that they feel like they're not really worth anything in the first place. And we wonder why it doesn't have the effect that we want it to. It's a beautiful idea. It's got some great value to add to our lives. But if you think of it like trying to write new information on a document that's already formatted with fonts and type size and paragraphs and bullet points, and every time you add something into it, it has to accommodate itself to that format, and you go, wait, I don't want that there. Subtracting the intangibles is like clearing format. So that now any intangibles are not competing with intellectual, emotional being space for their ability to stick. Because what's there is like a blank space. It's almost like, for those of you who remember the Etch-a-Sketch, turning the Etch-a-Sketch upside down, shaking it, now all of a sudden you can put a whole new drawing on there. But trying to put a whole new drawing on top of the drawing you already have there? Confusing. So, when you're working on the Johari window side of this, that is subtract the intangible side, you're working with the being level. When you're working in the tangible side, you're working with the doing level. When you're working in the subtraction upper quadrants, right and left, you're working with decreasing friction, which is about helping people accelerate the process in their life. And when you're working with the add quadrants down in the bottom left and right, you're working with increasing capacity. So let's check in. How does this register? Or rather, let me see. What do I really want to ask you? How does this affect your approach to coaching, what I've just been sharing?
Michael, this is Karen. I have to admit I'm a little confused.
Okay, good. Where are you confused?
I'm not sure how to... I don't think I got what it means. I'm not sure if it's the word, subtract intangibles, add intangibles, subtract. I don't know. I just don't understand. I think I just didn't understand the whole thing.
Okay.
Or maybe somebody can help me.
Well, let me clarify some things. Tangibles are things that you can touch, see, taste, etc., all of that sort of stuff. That part's clear, yes? You know, a tangible is like get a car, get a house.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Intangibles are like ideas, concepts, beliefs, emotional constructs, incomplete experiences, all of that kind of thing.
Okay.
That part's clear, yes?
Yep.
Okay. And then the idea of subtracting is clear. You know, like
yes.
helping someone subtract a belief about money.
Correct.
Clear, yes?
Yep.
So that would be subtracting an intangible. A belief about money would be something that's intangible. You can't touch it, you can't smell it, or even though it has tangible effects, you can't actually just go into the air and pull the belief system out of your head. It's pretty intangible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of subtracting it, you get, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may not necessarily have the means of the how to help people subtract it, which is a different question. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Well, that's a different area, but you understand the principle of subtracting the belief or subtracting the emotional concept or subtracting the attachment to this is how it has to be.
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. So you get the stuff about intangibles, you get the stuff about adding them, you get the idea that when you attempt to add a belief over top of a conflicting belief, that the belief you're trying to add is not going to stick?
Correct. That's why affirmations don't work.
Yes.
Okay, I get it.
That's one of many, many reasons why they don't work. Secondary reasons are the fact that most of the experiences that one is attempting to correct via affirmations happen on at least three planes, the intellectual and the emotional and the physical, let alone in the being state. But to simply try and do it on the intellectual level or to morph the emotional to match the intellectual level isn't going to necessarily grab it. So that's exactly why affirmations don't work. So, how are you doing with it now?
Better, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for bringing the question. So, who else? How is this playing in your world?
I've not seen it. This is Mickey. I've not seen, or I actually have not heard the word tangible and intangible in this context, so I'm actually have eyes closed and trying to visualize it. But what I see, the result of a successful result of subtracting intangibles through the process of coaching and questioning is a result of coaching. To me, the most successful coaching I feel that I've done is having the aha result in a paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm. And in that moment, what has happened is that you have subtracted an intangible that they had currently been attached to, meaning the paradigm through which they were living in the world.
Yes, exactly.
Which now makes space for the new paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the great values of questions, among other processes.
So, Michael, this is Libby. And when you said subtracting the whole, H-O-L-E.
H-O-L-E,
so
yeah.
Right, so that the person has gets back that experience of their whole, which kind of takes us right back to the you know, what Margie experienced, like trusting herself, and then somebody said earlier in the call, like giving them back the kind of the agency, their power.
Yes.
And so I think I get it. I think it's incredibly an incredibly powerful concept. And I can, you know, I can see it for myself, right? My certain beliefs, you know, that are just with me to the core that if I could get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my, you know, that's like, well, how I've been coached a lot, right? I mean, and I feel like they're still there, and it's just like so I really get the concept, and I think it's incredibly powerful. I just wish I knew how to do it better.
Okay, good. Well, previews of coming attractions. That's actually part of what we're going to be working on. Because typically where beliefs get stuck is that they have become part of feeling like they are one's identity. So we no longer think of them as something we have. We think of them as who we are. Now, the other thing that you're talking about is that to some degree, there are certain things that aren't as easy to subtract because the conventional coaching methods work from like a creative workaround frame. And so there are going to be some tools that I'll give you over the course of these next some in this session and some over the next one that will be able to get at that and pry the jaws of life between the collapse of belief being this is who I am versus this is what I have. And once it shifts from this is what I have to this is who I am, it's much easier to handle.
Michael, this is Dina.
Yes.
And what this is bringing up for me is what we talked about last time with the image of the spider making the web.
Yes.
And the web is the right side,
mm-hmm.
the tangibles, and the spider is the left side. And so that's an easier way for me to visualize for those who are trying to get an image.
That's a great image.
Helpful. You know, it's like that's the intangibles are who we are as humans.
Yes.
So if we coach to the right side of your Johari's window, we don't make any profound shift for ourselves about us or for our clients when we're working with them. They just
Absolutely.
Have more or less stuff or more or less problems solved.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm glad you put it in the spider context. Yeah.
That was great. Thank you. Now I really get it. This is Karen.
I'm glad.
Perfect. Yeah. And we're also, you know, as it says, as the diagram indicates, when we're working on the right side, the web, we're in the land of doing. And when we're on the left side, the spider, we're in the land of being. And invariably, being always informs doing. It informs the actions and decisions we're making and taking.
Except that we so often think if we do the doing, we'll shift the being, but it's bass backwards.
Absolutely.
Oh, we don't take time to be.
Yeah.
Yes. Cool. So here we go. Here are some of the things to subtract. Intangibles. Assumptions of skill or training level. Sometimes, you know, people think they're better than they are. Whether it's in baseball, whether it's as a project manager, or whether it, you know, and they don't want to recognize that, you know, they haven't actually learned what they think they have mastery of. Because if they had mastery of it, guess what? Wouldn't be an issue. Okay? So sometimes we have to challenge that the assumption of the level so that we can return them to an actual awareness of where they are so that they can then make whatever adjustments they need to make to move forward. Beliefs, subtract beliefs. Beliefs are constructions. No one was born with a belief. Nobody on this call had a belief when you were born. You didn't even have the word for it. So every belief is a construct. It's cobbled together over our experiences, the messages that we get from the world, and then the interpretation that we generate based on where we're standing and the perspective we're holding. Unfortunately, it looks, smells, and tastes like truth or facts. Helping subtract the ego. For a coach, one of the ego pieces that's a big challenge for them to subtract is the identity of being an expert, needing to be the one who knows, which absolutely gets in the way of the, being the one who asks. It isn't that you don't know anything and that what you know isn't valuable and at times isn't useful to relay. But at that point in time, when we were busy reveling in our expertise, we're playing with another hat. The hat may be consultant, parent, mentor, trainer, teacher, elder, manager, whatever it is. It also, if we feel like we are the one who knows and the client presents us with something that we don't have the answer to, now all of a sudden we go into anxiety mode. I should be able to know about that. I should figure out or how to help them solve that problem. I should have the answer to that. I've long thought that one of the key elements of any coach's training is to coach someone on something you absolutely know nothing about. Because you won't be tempted to dip into the expertise of your life. You'll absolutely have to listen, pay attention, be in presence, and ask questions. What else to subtract is fears. What will happen if, or what happened before that I should fear again? Or what will happen if I don't do X, Y, or Z? Something else to subtract is ignorance. Ignorance isn't about stupidity. It's simply the lacking of certain information or knowledge. Sometimes it can be that simple. Sometimes, going back to Dina's earlier statement, it can be as simple as, what do you need to learn about how this process goes? And then they go and learn it, and all of a sudden, all of the anxiety is gone. And then last on this list, although I do have, will have in the resource area, a bigger list for you about subtraction with an expansion of each. But last on this list is hungers, which is my word for needs, Maslow's hierarchy, et cetera, that kind of stuff. Because I found that the word hungers actually had a visceral reaction in me, and I could feel it, and it would translate easier than needs. You know, most people understand and recognize a hunger. When you feel a hunger for something, when you felt hungry. And these are very deep inner drivers, a hunger to feel needed, valued, important, liked, powerful, respected, appreciated, heard, loved. And there's a whole list that, as Karen mentioned, are in the book, Hungers. So, these are just some of the areas to subtract. And again, this isn't about dragging the list to the call or trying to memorize the list. It's to allow for the fact that once you attune and study this list, attune to this list, it's going to be a natural part of there, just like the structure of questions. And now your intuition is going to guide by hearing what it is that's going to be subtracting. It's going to help you construct the question. Basically, subtract the stuff. I found this movie poster. I thought it was great. Picture of this guy with this stuff coming out of his mouth. It was a movie in the 70s, I think, called The Stuff. And you can't read it from the poster right now, but it says, if you see the stuff in stores, call the police. If you have it in your home, don't touch it. Get out. The stuff is a product of nature, a deadly living organism. It is addictive and destructive. It can overcome your mind and take over your body, and nothing can stop it. That's part of the poster advert. Basically, what we're looking to do is subtract the stuff that's interfering with people having a full expression of their lives in the direction that's most meaningful and important to them. Any questions at this juncture? Okay. So, subtracting fear. I'm going to hold this demo for next week. We'll come back to it. Let's do a coaching the moment, not the history. Same order of people, but I'll start the direction in a different direction. Except, who would like to be experience some coaching here? It's going to be fairly quick.
Michael, I would. This is Connie with a
okay.
K.
Okay. All right. Now, Connie, your position was number?
7.
Okay. Margie, that's yours. Okay?
Okay.
Good. All right. So now what we're going to do is we're going to start at 4 and go all the way 3, 2, and then back through 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. Okay? We'll go that way. So, Connie with a K, if you'd like to briefly describe your scenario, everybody knows how to play the game, except this additional piece is, in your listening, we're just going to tune artificially, albeit I understand, attune to what it is that you hear to be subtracted. You don't even need to know what the word is, the label, but what it is that you hear to be subtracted. And then take a moment, be present to what you hear to be subtracted out of what she says. Let the question begin to come through you. You don't have to worry about having the right question. The question that comes through you is what we're after. Okay? So, Connie, your ball.
All right. Well, I have recently signed up for a subscription on a dating service online, and I'm beginning that process of reaching out and meeting new people, and I have a lot of conflicting, just a lot of stuff comes up for me when I just even start thinking about it.
And just so that I can help start this off, what is it that you would really like to be coached on regarding that?
I'd really like to be present to the experience and enjoy it.
Great. Number 4, your ball.
Hi, Connie. It's Dina. What extraordinary, wonderful part of you do you want to bring to this process of online dating?
Oh, wow. I want to bring the part of me that really has the ability to be present and appreciate another person.
Hi, Connie. This is Pam.
Hi, Pam.
I really admire your courage in entering into this process, and I can certainly hear your nervousness. You kind of laughed, and there was some different emotions when you said there's this stuff getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
How is that impacting you?
Oh, Well, well, as I'm just sitting in my chair, I'm kind of nibbling on my nails, and I feel nervous, and I've even had a couple nights when I had a hard time sleeping, which is not my deal. I usually sleep like a log, so it's really impacting me physically.
Mm-hmm. I think that I'm out of turn, but it's Mickey, I'm number three. Is it appropriate for me to ask my question now?
It's okay with
Hello?
Me.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. It sounds like there's both anticipation and a little standoffishness, and you mentioned previous experiences, and I'm just wondering, you used the word stuff that is lingering from previous experiences. Could you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by the stuff?
Okay, this is a questions God intervention.
Okay.
I want to ask you to upgrade that question, Mickey. That's a yes-no question.
Oh, okay.
That is relying
okay.
on the convention of somebody continuing. So you see that she could say no. You know, when it's framed with, and this is for everybody to understand, is that when it's framed with could you, would you, can you, will you, did you, are you,
okay.
all of those sort of things, it sets it
Got
in that
it.
Direction. Yeah.
What about a what? Is that?
Go for it.
What are you bringing to this new social media or internet media? What are you bringing that had a negative impact? I'm not sure how to frame that.
Okay.
She had said
so you're moving in the right direction.
Okay.
So what if I hear what you're saying, let me see if I can help you. Would that be okay?
Absolutely, please.
Okay. Great. So what I hear about what you're saying is that it seems like, and I'm not certain, but it seems like what you're asking is how is the residue of previous experiences affecting your current experience with the internet dating service?
Nail on the head. That's exactly what I wasn't framing it right, but that is exactly the idea.
Great. So, Connie, would you – thank you, Mickey. So, Connie, would
thank you,
you ask – you're welcome. Would you answer that question?
Well, I'd like to answer the question. It feels like there's so many different answers that I don't quite know where to start. It's a really good question in that it sort of gets at the experience of it. It's such a jumble of things that my experience of it just gets, I don't know what piece of it to address first.
This is Karen. What do you think for yourself might be the underlying belief about yourself and this process that is keeping you stuck where you are now?
Well, my first response was that the phrase came up. I hate to say it out loud because it sounds kind of silly, but the phrase that came up is like, well, I'm kind of damaged goods. I've been through several relationships. I'm kind of damaged. I might be seen as damaged goods. That's better. Which, interestingly enough, as I say that out loud, I feel better, because then I can see that's not true.
What number are we on? I'm a little confused.
10.
About the
next is 10.
Karen, which number were you?
I was 2, so next is 10.
Next is 10.
Yep, hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Connie. My phone was all messed up. What do you think? You alluded at it earlier about feeling that you were damaged. But what do you think scares you the most about this whole process?
What I hesitate the most about is just my life story that at some point will, you know, in pieces be told to anyone that I become, you know, serious about spending time with, and there just might be some surprises. They might respond. They might say, "Ooh, that's not okay with me." Some of the things about you just might not be okay with me. And that, I think that's a, you know, obviously is a possibility, because we're all sorting through and trying to match up with someone that we are interested in. And some of those ways we sort is, oh, that's not okay with me. And so I will move on. So I just think, you know, people will be doing that with me too.
Hi, this is Ron. Hi, Karen. I'm curious, when you think about this journey you're about to go on, getting ready to move forward with, what parts of the damaged goods, I suppose, you know, might be potentially neutralized in this experience?
Oh, wow. Well, all of it could be neutralized, actually, because most of it is, you know, my concerns are all about parts of me that either just are or, you know, things that I, so it could all be neutralized in the process. It could all say, you know, here I am, and that's the way it is, and I'm okay, and yeah, I think it all could be neutralized. So the potential is huge for just the whole process of it being a really rewarding, cleansing, neutralizing thing for me.
Hi, this is Libby, and it sounds like you're about to step into a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what it would feel like to just be completely accepted and starting with yourself.
I think that would be fabulous.
So I hear some emotion there, and I just want to be with you in that moment. But I know it's not my turn to speak.
And I think this is Margie, and I think it's my turn. And, yeah, I was sensing that it was a good time not to talk. Here's my question for you. Where are you now with all of this?
Where am I now as opposed to where we when we started the questions? I am feeling I'm feeling in a very different place. I'm feeling very more contemplative about where I am. I also feel more. I feel strong about it. I feel like, oh, here is this new opportunity for me, and what am I going to do with it? It feels still. I still feel kind of hesitant, but I don't feel overwhelmed.
Are we waiting for number 7?
Yes.
Oh, I think we're waiting for number 6 because I was number.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I didn't realize. I'm sorry. Natal.
I've said some of the most profound things on you.
So my question for you is: from where you are right now, what is the sense that you want to give to this adventure that you are engaging in?
What is the sense I want to give? I would like, I like that word adventure. I would like it to be an adventure. I just would like to not have a little bit of that nagging fear of I don't know. It could be that what's left here is just, you know, I don't know, and there is a little, I don't know, I feel a little nervous still. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I have a sense more of how I'd like to be. I just feel a little bit of nervousness I can't seem to subtract. Maybe it is part of the process, and it's just something to be experienced. Maybe I don't get to subtract that ahead of time. As if I could get prepared enough so that it would not ever, that I would never be nervous or would never be. Uncomfortable. Maybe that's not possible. Maybe part of that is just walking through it.
and I think we're at number five.
Sorry, this is Pam. I've already asked the question. Are we continuing?
Oh, okay, great. No.
Sorry,
that's fine.
I did mine. I'll ask again,
yeah.
But.
No, that's okay. Okay, great. And what I want to point to here, thank you, Connie. Thank you for being you and being so genuinely open and vulnerable.
Oh, thank everyone.
Yeah. What I want to point to here, there are a number of things that I want to point to, is first and foremost is, did you notice at the end how the silence prompted more awareness?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
We are far too often tempted to jump in to that silence and do something with it. And yet by leaving it there, Connie, who you can already hear self-processes very well, was allowed to take her own process further and pose even her own question. The wondering of, maybe I don't get to take that out. Maybe it's just part of the going through it. At least in being able to have that question for herself, she can decide whether or not it's something she wants to address taking out of, or she wants to walk through. And so in that moment, what got subtracted was the notion that the nervousness might actually not be wrong or inappropriate. You know? The other thing I want to point to is that if you notice, and as you listen, you may have noticed that some questions took us backwards, and some questions took us forwards. So as you interact with people this week, one of the things I'm going to ask you to do is see if your question is built off what you heard before versus what you just heard. An example of one that came out of what you just heard was Margie's question on where are you now? Now, she heard the emotion. She knew it wasn't time to say anything. And then she asked, where are you now? And that came out of hearing and recognizing and feeling the difference that was going on for Connie. So just keep being aware of how our questions either take somebody backward into where we think it's a good idea that they should explore this versus where are they and what's calling for, what exploration is being calling for now. We're afraid that if where we didn't go before doesn't get done, that something will be wrong. Not necessarily. Anything else anyone wants to say about that experience? And by the way, there was a lot of wonderful who coaching in there, spider coaching. Anything anyone wants to share about that experience before we close our session today? And by the way, yes, go ahead.
I just want to thank everyone. There were great. Thank you for helping me move on this topic. I really appreciate it. That's all.
Yeah. And so notice the questions that other people had. Notice how it was different from the question that you may have asked at that time. Take a look at what the question was designed to do. Again, we want to keep looking at that piece. What's it designed to do? So anything anyone wants to share at this moment before we close? One more slide to go. Okie dokie. Shifting forward, here are three questions for you to play with this week. What self are you most unwilling to let go of regarding your impact with clients? Next is, how is the attachment to that self holding both you and your clients back? And the third one is, what is the leap of self you sense is next for you in your mastery of questions?
Michael, will these be in the resources, or have you flipped to the slide?
Okay. Yep, they'll be in the slides resources. Yep, and they'll be in the recording, as well as a list of things to subtract. That's a more expanded list. So, none of those are things that need to be answered at this moment. They're just things to play with. And what I want to do here is just find out from a few of you what rang your bell today out of the experience that we all generated. Oh, and one, the last thing, by the way, is what was the point of the arch picture? That's the third part of the CEUs. So now, what rang your bell out of today's experience?
Michael, with arch pictures, I was listening to you, not looking at photos.
Then you'll probably have to take a look at the slides.
And
you'll see
how,
the point of it.
How would one do that? But I was taking notes on another screen.
Ah, it's in the. It'll be in the resource area. There's a PDF of the slides.
Okay.
And you'll also hear it in the recording. Okay, so going back just briefly, what rang your bell out of today's experience that we all generated?
This is Pam here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely the performance equation, and that we're subtracting, not adding.
Mm.
And the piece on the interference, that was really helpful.
Great. And it's not that we won't add,
mm-hmm.
but adding over top of what's already there before we've subtracted makes that adding much more difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
The statement, this is Mickey, the statement that you made, being the one who knows gets in the way of being the one who asks, really made an impact. Got me thinking.
Great.
Michael, this is Polly. Listening to everything, really listening, I realized that from the two people that volunteered, it's so important to listen to the shifts that are taking place within the questions and the answers. And so when you hear those shifts, it's so easy to ask a question. You don't have to think about it. It's just there.
Yes. And it's really important to hear those shifts, because if we don't hear those shifts, we're asking questions that are actually out of a past state of being with that person.
Yeah.
We haven't recognized that they have shifted, and so now our questions need to be asked of the person who has shifted, not of the one who was there before the shift. How about one or two more?
This is Margie. I think that's the big thing that I'm walking away with, besides getting some great coaching, is really being fully present with that specific moment. Because I do find myself once in a while catching something that they said that I am going on an assumption that, okay, they're just trying to smooth over that and pass it by. And
mm-hmm.
I need to be, you know, more fully present at this very moment, as opposed to go back a couple statements.
Yes, and if in this present moment you, what's called to you is to go back a couple of statements, that's going to be fine. Versus, I have to make sure that I go get that because, you know, I'm supposed to. Right.
Yeah.
So by being present, you'll be able to discern whether or not it is time to go back and pick up something, a thread that was there earlier that now all of a sudden seems relevant, or not? And who wants to close it out?
Well, this is Olivia. I'll close it out. I just love the idea of subtracting intangibles. And it was a beautiful demonstration, you know, of being present to the moment and looking for really the being of the person.
Hmm. Great. Yes, there's plenty of time to get into the doing. Once you get people into the being and they get congruent with themselves, then all of the doing flows much more naturally, organically, and sustainably instead of artificially out of an intellectual construct that says, strategically, this is what I should do. Very cool. Thank you all for generating a beautiful experience. Thank you, coaches. For coaching, and thank you to Margie and Connie for being the people who would bring forth the rest of the experience for everybody else. We'll be doing more of this in both of the other sessions, so please do bring something that you would like to have some movement on, and if it's appropriate, we'll address it in the next two sessions, because it is, after all, about practice. And I appreciate all of you, and we'll see you next week ready to play.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye, all.
Bye-bye.